Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart. Show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. Today is June 1st, and it is an absolutely gorgeous day here in Virginia. I hope that wherever you are on the planet, you are able to experience the same beauty that we are having here today in some way in your life, because it is just amazing outside. So I'm really excited about our show today. It's a little different from something we've been doing lately. But before I get started on that, I want to let you know of some great things that we have coming up. Our next show is June 15th, and that show is going to feature Kelly Centers. And Kelly is an angel communicator, a healer. She's into some nutrition stuff. She's really kind of a Jill of all trades and very, very well adapted in all of them. She's going to be talking to us about the seven universal laws and the archangels that govern them. So she's going to be giving us a different spin on things. If you've watched The Secret and kind of enjoyed it but found that there were some things that you thought might be missing in there, then she's going to really start answering some questions for you. We're also going to be offering, through the Honoring Hour, Kelly is going to be offering a course that she teaches beginning in July, and we'll be firming that up, and hopefully by her date we'll have all the specifics on that, but we'll definitely be having it shortly after. So please keep in touch and definitely visit our website at www.thehonoringhour.com. You can connect with Kelly and find out a little bit more from our guest page there. On the 29th, we're going to be having Robert Harding. And Robert is a man who wrote a book called Blue Star, talking about the synchronicities that started occurring in his life and how he followed them. An absolutely amazing story. I just finished reading the book a couple of days ago and literally read it in like 3 days. It's just such a good, quick, wonderful read of just about how to follow your life. It really is the epitome of what I'm looking to get across here on the Honoring Hour in just a plain Jane language. This is a man that did not have the terminology, wasn't like quote-unquote spiritually bound, and just started following synchronicities, and his whole life is different today. So I'm very excited about that show on June 29th as well. But today we have, I have with me a good friend, Michelle Miller, who's going to be talking with me, helping me facilitate this talk, and we ask that you join us also on the difference between judgment and discernment. So I'd like to welcome as my co-host today, Michelle Miller. How are you, Michelle?
Oh, I'm doing so well, Lynn, and I'm really excited to be here. When you called me about this topic, you know, you and I have discussed this many times, and I'm just really excited to hear some wisdom and insight from callers and in the chat room and also from you as well.
Right. And speaking of callers and chatters, I just want to let you guys know that if you're listening out there today and when you're calling in, I'm using Firefox, which does not allow me to open up both windows at the same time. Usually I have them side by side, and I'm having to flip back and forth. So if you're a caller and I'm not getting to you immediately, remember you need to press 1 if you want to talk so that your hand gets raised, but just bear with me because I'm going back and forth between, and sometimes I get a little caught up in the conversation and forget to monitor the screen as well. So if you guys can just help me with that and bear with me, I'd greatly appreciate it. So, Michelle, I know that you did, you know, like you said, we talk about this a lot. You know, one of the things that I really don't want in my life is I don't want to get caught up in judgment for myself or with others, but I know if I'm judging, then I'm more likely to have others judge me. So I really kind of get in phases of my life where I'm super diligent about that and probably hyper-vigilant to the point where it's it drives me nuts. But that's a topic of conversation we can get into pretty frequently, right, Michelle?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you and I have a lot of talks about the whole idea of should, have to, you know, those attachment phrases that really, when you address those to people, you're really throwing shame their way. And it just stops conversations. It really stops the learning about someone's perceptions. And really, it disallows you to really step into what they're trying to communicate to you, and it puts that barrier. And, you know, the difference between judgment and discernment is judgment is really evaluating of evidence, and a lot of that is from your own perspective. And so many times people are walking through life and have experienced things or just have a different way of being. And there's so much learning in that. And through just evaluating from our own perception, we just don't allow that allowing of learning to come in. And, you know, anytime you stop learning, you're sitting in a place of ignorance, where discernment is about keen insight. It's about truly knowing who you are, but being willing to hold the space to know who somebody else is. And in that place, you can say yes or no with equal blessings, without the shame, and really bring in the learning and the experiences that are so beautiful in the diversity of the world that really open up our hearts and minds.
Great. Yeah, that's true. It's interesting, in the research that I was doing, you know, Spirit started giving me some information about it, but I wanted to go and get other people's ideas about it, just in seeing how others deal with it. And one of the common threads that I found in a lot of these papers that I was reading was that judgment comes from a place of feeling of shame and inferiority, which is very similar in nature to what, you know, I was getting in terms of, like, Spirit shows me things of how it applies in my life. So they were, the past couple of days I've just had a review of, you know, where judgment came from. And I did come from a very, very judgmental upbringing, you know, just the whole dynamic of it. And by no means am I saying anything bad about my family. I've got a great family. I can, you know, take them with a dose of sugar on a lot of days. But, you know, they did, and I realized, you know, as I was kind of going through this and watching the review, Spirit said, you know, this is what I chose to come into to overcome. Like, I really needed to come in and overcome this idea that I should be ashamed of myself or that I'm inferior in any way, and that, I think, is true for many people. It just happens to be a major life lesson for me. But what Spirit had told me was, in looking at it there, is that judgment often masks a big heart, someone that has a big heart, but they're fearful. So judgment will mask that, and they have a desire to be loved, but a fear that they're not going to be accepted as who they genuinely are, which kind of plays into that inferiority idea and that idea of shame, that they can't be authentic in that. So that was something, but definitely that concept of judgment comes from a place of shame and inferiority was just redundant. I mean, just the common thread through all of the papers that I was reading.
You know, that is so true. You know, it's so funny. I listen to so many people who are, you know, currently writing and publishing books or, you know, writing papers for classes or whatever, and there's always this fear that, you know, if I show up as I really am and I do my best, someone is going to come along and tell me that just wasn't good enough. And just read a paper, and it's the imposter complex, you know, that somehow, you know, when we come into this world and when we come into our families, sometimes out of fear, families want to shelter you, and they kind of clip your wings a little bit because they want to keep you safe. And that can engender some core belief systems that we're really not okay flying free exactly who we are. And it creates this imposter complex that if we go out and if we really shine, someone's going to come along and say, you're not allowed to do that. And when we really sit in that fear and that and clip our own wings in that way, you know, sometimes we'll come up on someone who is flying free, and because we're caged, we want them to be caged too, that whole misery loves company. And in that disavowing of ourselves, we have a tendency to disavow others, and I really believe that is the underlying tenet of judgment, of simply saying, I'm saying no to myself, and so through that, I feel the need to say no to you too.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and I, you know, I had a situation occur last week where, you know, my son came home with some news that in my family history and my learning really would have put me in a place of judgment. And it's just not a place that we would have been. And I'll go ahead and share my son, who is young. I mean, he's an adult, but he's young. His girlfriend is pregnant. And for one, you know, my family, I have to say that my siblings are married. They're long-term marriages. You know, I was the black sheep. I got married much later in life than my siblings did. I did things a little bit backwards. You know, I just have a different philosophy. And from that in and of itself, there was a lot of shame. I have nieces and nephews that are, you know, well into their later 20s and you know, even in their 30s, they're not married. They're, you know, they're just doing their lives very differently, which is, you know, very much what, you know, my family has kind of done, you know, a little bit more like I am. My sisters got married young, but they've stayed married. And, you know, my nieces and nephews tend to be a little bit more like me in terms of they're taking their time doing stuff. But definitely, you know, we were, you know, we're a family that has just not had that next generation. So, you know, when I looked at that, my initial response couldn't even be the same because I was torn between the love I have for my son and my desire to support him and my core belief of, oh, you know, here it is, it's a teen pregnancy, it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I started reaching out to friends that I had in school that got pregnant in school that still have those long-term marriages that are doing well. And I really was able to understand the difference between, you know, or the idea of judgment and how it was really imposed on me, this whole way of living, just because I didn't quote-unquote fit in. And I chose not to stay in judgment of, you know, my son or anybody else. And I also made the choice not to be in judgment of my family, who I knew was going to have mixed emotions about it. And it's been really interesting to watch how, as we've told them, you know, they've gone into their initial reaction, and because I wasn't standing there with them, they really had no place to go in that judgment. Like, I was really firm in, I'm supportive, this is great, you know, we're going to make the best of this, this is how it is. And they basically had to, and that vibration was so strong, they had to move into a place of either being quiet and going off, and I could feel, even in my presence, that they weren't in that whole, you know, I'm just going to be quiet and sit here and, you know, shoot judgment darts at you. But they really, like, their vibrations were shaken up by that, and they couldn't stay in that place. And they started rethinking it a little bit differently. So it was amazing at how just not taking on that position of inferiority and not feeling shame just dispelled the judgment of others in my life at that time.
Yeah, you know, Lynn, it's been shown over and over again in studies that in so many different avenues of bullying, of teenage pregnancies, whatever, to cope, our coping skills are so dependent on having a collaborative supportive network. In cases of bullying where children surround or adults even surround people and you know, throw those judgment darts at them, it's shown that just one person standing up and saying, no, this is not allowed, you know, we will support, we will love, you know, standing in that truth can absolutely shift that dynamic. And, you know, the same with any life event that's life-changing. It's having that support of those around us, knowing that we're not on our own, that, you know, life happens no matter what it is. And really having someone there sets the stage for others who are in that collaborative group to really follow that example. And, you know, I really salute the love of your, you know, the love you have for your son and your willingness to just stand up and say, hey, I love this boy. And this is his life, and I'm absolutely going to support him in this and do whatever I can for his life choice to be an absolute success in his life. And I think that's beautiful.
Right. Yeah, and there's, you know, there's just some other ways. You know, most of the place that I run into, you know, where I get torn about judgment is that I want to know, you know, am I being judgmental of someone when in my spiritual practice? And when I'm actually doing readings, you know, I'm really blessed because of the channeling aspect that personally, my personality's out of it a lot. And so I don't have to worry about it so much. But when I am teaching or when I'm doing something like that, if I'm just not in my groove when I'm dealing with people, that's really where it comes in that I get the most concerned about whether I'm being judgmental or whether I'm discerning. Because, you know, we all have different spiritual practices that work, even when we're in the same, you know, like if we go to the same church or we have the same philosophies, it's personalized. And so where someone might, you know, have a little bit of a different belief, it's really okay, and I do know that. It's when it gets a little bit greater for me, like those differences vary a little bit more. You know, like with, you know, in religions, I try to not get caught up in those and realize that all religions are, you know, have value, especially if they're leading the people and the people are getting something out of it and it's bringing them closer to spirit. But then when you get into the religions that are shutting down, I have to remember that each person has to have their own experience. And that's where, you know, like I really come in and start being mindful of, or trying to be mindful, because sometimes, you know, I'm just flat out human and I'm not in that that spiritual place, but you know, just not having judgment when people are, you know, are being what I would consider closed-minded. And that brought me to when I was looking through just something that darted out to me, just like a real quick, how am I just, you know, able to tell the difference between discernment and awareness and like what I want to be a part of and what I don't. And it would just like in a couple of words, they put discernment is awareness. Like, so discernment is taking inventory of what's around you and being aware of that. And judgment is what you do with what you notice. So if I'm noticing that there's an apple on my desk, then that's just a notice. If I decide that apples are bad and associate that eating an apple is bad, then that could be a judgment. If I choose not to eat an apple because it's not right for me, then that's a discernment. You know, other people can eat apples, and that's fine. And that's a real watered-down version of putting that in there. But that was, you know, just a real quick mindset out there, you know, to help me distinguish, you know, and go, and am I taking an observation? Am I making a decision for me? Or am I, you know, applying my decision onto other people? You know, so am I saying that anybody that eats apples is eating a bad fruit? You know, that's a judgment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just using the apple analogy, if you have a bad apple in a basket, you know, you go in, you feel around, you remove the bad apple and say, no, this isn't part of a healthy eating, and then the rest of the basket's fine. You know, same thing with religions. There are people who have extrinsic beliefs where they really set everything outside of themselves and really want to be just fed, you know, insights, being told how to live. And others really have an intrinsic belief where their faith moves through them and allows them to really move through the world in a faith-based way. That usually, you know, most religions, their foundations are love and peace, and, you know, but there's always that, you know, that judgment part, it really has a lot to do with where you base your information. Discernment is such a part, it's so intrinsic. It's having that allowing of being able to say, from my experiences, from what I'm feeling, you know, I'm opening to listening, but you know, with, like I said, the same blessings of yes or no, experiencing another way of viewing without feeling the need to take it on in a codependence way or disavow it in a fear judgment sort of way, just really allows you to experience life and, you know, really grasp and see the beauty of it, bringing more and more learning into your life. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah. I when I was flitting around, I came across a little blurb from Lori Rakowski, and I'm hoping I'm saying her name right. She co-authored the book A Victim No More, and I thought she had a really good way of just describing this. She said, being judgmental comes from an emotion-based negative opinion that we tend to form with the I am right and you are wrong mindset. Discrimination is a skill used to make an informed decision. To make an informed decision from an observer's point of view. You seek to honor yourself and learn to let your inner voice or intuition guide you through a love-based filter in your decision-making process. So she's saying that, you know, discernment comes a lot from our internal guidance system. We can understand that, you know, oh, well, that doesn't work for me, and so I'm going to go with that. But it's not it doesn't work for me because it's wrong. you know, in general, it just doesn't work for me because it's not vibrationally fit for me. So I thought she had a really beautiful way of describing that, and I'm sorry that I was writing kind of fast and didn't read it as eloquently as she put it, but, you know, that's really something that I looked at, and I was interested in going more into and learning a little bit more about her, but apparently her website you have to have, like, some type of previous access to, and I just had not had the opportunity to go and do that. But her name is Lori Rakowski, and she wrote the book A Victim No More. And from what I can understand, she really started by just not being judgmental of herself, just releasing the judgments that she had on herself. And personally, I think that that's a great place to start. It's, you know, it's what I work on that in order to keep myself out of judgment. I notice that when I'm starting to judge others, I am feeling judgmental of myself and have to back out of that.
Yeah, you know, that's where you kind of get into what are the core belief systems that you're operating from. You know, so many of us in growing up, you know, it's shown any kind of trauma, verbal, abusive, whatever, can create these what they call, you know, holographic, experiential things within the body. And basically it's these stuck emotions that kind of trigger aspects of our nervous system. And it's shown that people who go through these things, the amygdala in their brain enlarges, and the amygdala is the part of the brain that actually governs how much fear we perceive things through. So, you know, when you're talking about internal judgments leading to external judgments, when we sit in a place of fear, a disavowing of the self, we tend to filter everything through that core belief system and project it onto everything that comes our way. And, you know, in that fear is a judgment decision. I mean, we hear all the time the phrase snap judgments, but how often do we hear snap discernments? You don't, because discernment is really a place of sitting in a wisdom, that keen insight, taking the time to evaluate what's being presented to you, and then making a decision from a true inner knowing of yourself, and then saying yes or no, like I said, with equal glee, and without that shaming of another, having to push that away out of fear. That really, like I said, allows us to engender a great deal of learning and really seeing the diverse beauty in the world.
So now this is a physical aspect. Can you go back and just just state that again, how the amygdala is impacted and how it turns around and impacts us? Can you?
Oh, absolutely. It's been found. There's a lot of theories out there about how the brain works biochemically or physiologically, and what they're finding is that when someone is presented with a trauma, whether it be a massive momentary trauma in adulthood or a habitual trauma throughout life, that you actually take that in emotionally rather than rationally, which creates emotionally charged habitual behavior that you project into future events. So where in that moment, how you felt, that startle response, that flight and flight was entirely appropriate, people tend to generalize, and your body learns, and this information is encoded through different aspects of your brain. And there's two great systems. It's the ventral medial and the dorsal lateral that actually encode this information, and through habitual processes actually map your brain. And trauma has an effect on the amygdala, which is where we process a lot of our emotions, in a part of the brain that's called the mesolimbic system. And people who have severe trauma or habitual trauma through childhood and development have a tendency to have an enlargement of the amygdala. And what that does is that whenever sensation actually comes in, you actually are vulnerable to have a heightened fear response. And because this energy of this emotion or trauma is trapped within aspects of the body, what it will do is influence your emotional reaction to future events. So if, let's say, you were in an abusive childhood, a stranger coming up to you was a very frightening thing because your life was so chaotic. As an adult, you may shy away from intimacy for the simple fact that intimacy in your body's mind, in your emotional body, governs fear, fight, and flight, which will unconsciously trigger habitual behavioral events that will push intimacy away, either you will not be consistent in your friendships and allow things to fall away, or you may self-sabotage your own love for yourself out of fear of success, because if I succeed and people get to know me, you know, they're going to see me as an imposter and tell me that I didn't deserve this. So, you know, it's very, very important to process your emotions fully experientially, which means moving into the body, feeling them fully, finding where they're at. And once you have a really core understanding emotionally of that and feeling it through your body and allowing to move through it and release it, it's then that the rational mind can come in and say, well, in this moment I'm feeling anger, and then you feel it a little more fully and say, okay, but it goes back deeper past into my past. And, you know, research is finding that when people actually hit on the initial trauma that created this stuck emotion in the hologram of our bodies, their whole body changes structure. They relax, and there's a knowing that lights up in them. Oh my goodness, this is the belief system that I've been sitting in that's been governing not only how my brain maps itself, but in all my behaviors and my interactions with others. And through moving through that, then you can start to reframe it. You know, that, you know, open up your perspectives of what really happened there. Bless the wisdom of the child or the adult in that moment who acted correctly, but really stop the generalizing of that fight and flight response when you come into new situations in your life. And in doing so, and it's so beautiful how we're made to succeed, I mean, just the divine intervention in the creation of our bodies, when you step into being in the now and really mindfully looking at new situations and not having that emotionally reactive or emotionally driven behavior, you actually start to remap your brain. And through that, you know, the energy in your prefrontal cortex, which is all your executive decision making, starts to heighten, and your perspectives start to broaden, new behaviors become available to you, and you can actually start releasing the behavior patterns that don't serve you. And, you know, it's not a magical momentary thing. It, you know, habit builds neurons, and new habits build neurons, and it takes time. And, you know, to me, that's kind of the biological basis of grace. I mean, we have a spiritual basis of grace that, you know, is so engendered in every single cell of our body, and giving us the time to repeatedly over and over move in more loving ways and in more life-affirming ways. And then one day, these new habits become, you know, permanent. And all of a sudden, you find yourself moving into new situations with more joy, you know, with a more expanded horizon. And that's, you know, the idea of creation, of co-creating with the universe, is really being able to see it fully and everything that's coming your way without having to neurotically or through the frightened child grasp to whatever is just presented to you. It gives you discernment because you understand that you are fully capable and are fully taken care of, and nothing is really denied you. It's just, where do you choose to look? You know, how do you choose to perceive? How do you choose to discern in drawing in what it is you want to see in your life? And, you know, we are made to create from the very cells in our bodies all the way down to the molecular, genetic, energetic place up through our cognitive and rational minds. You know, in studying this, I'm in a constant state of amazement.
That's great. That's a wonderful explanation, and it was a wonderful illustration of how dangerous judgment can be, because, you know, as you were saying, it can affect us all across our life, you know, our relationships, and keeping in mind that judgment is coming from a feeling of shame and inferiority, you know, it will keep us out of, you know, being our full and authentic selves. So, you know, you just did a great job of really illustrating that. I just want to remind, for those of you that have called in and are sitting there, if you press 1 and your hand goes up, so that you know, there's nobody's hand up right now. So if you think you've pressed 1, at this point you have not, or maybe you pressed it too many times and it went back down, but just press 1 time and your hand will go up. Otherwise, I'm going to think that you're listening. In the chat room, we've had some comments. JR's commented in, and he said that he tries to stay in the space of seeing the situation as a message from spirit, and then he's less likely to go into the matter from the view of the ego. And I think that's a great a great way of doing it is just looking at everything as a message from Spirit and not taking it personally. It's there for everyone. And he jokingly said behind, notice I said less likely no one's 100%. And that's the absolute truth. I mean, we have to remember that we are here having an experience, and our emotional body is a tool that we have brought with us. And so sometimes it's going to be a little overcharged with different things, and that's okay. That's when you just make the observation and you go on. He was definitely agreeing with you, Michelle, that you have to go back and heal those old energy vibrations from the past, allowing self to grow and move forward in a new light. And, you know, as, you know, again, you know, anybody that talks with me on the phone for a little bit gets into personal conversations, you know, I mean, it's so, or if you've ever worked with me even, it's definitely something I really bring up to people. We store the stuff in our body. So, you know, not only are we having old traumas in there, but we're producing the same type of situations if we've got that pattern ingrained in our brain, like Michelle was talking. So it's just a whole, you know, we're living it all over. You need to start letting go. And one of the things that I was running across, too, as I was doing the research, and that you know, I really realize and agree with 100%, is that, you know, not making a decision, like not being able to make decisions, is not helpful. That keeps us in a place of judgment. It doesn't allow discernment either. We have to, you know, take responsibility for ourselves. And I feel like every show leads back to that. You know, maybe we should just rename this the Responsibility Show, because I feel like I bring that up on every show. But taking responsibility for ourselves is so important. And as Michelle was saying, you can redo your patterns and habits. Nothing is hopeless. It's just a matter of making the choice to do so. And being able to say no thank you to someone, you know, if they're not vibrating with you 100%, or it's just not it's just not what you feel is appropriate for yourself, or, you know, or for your family, then, you know, that's okay too. Just saying no thank you. And it's not personal. It's just like, that just isn't for me. And then we have, JR has also put in here, you have to want it enough to allow yourself the patience to heal, grow, and expand. Change is never easy when we are coming from a place of healing and starting over. And you're right, it's not necessarily easy. You know, change is the one constant. You would think that as humans we're used to that. We change every day. You know, we're shedding skin and growing new skin. Every day we get up, the world is a little bit different. And yet when we're talking about change in our life, like changing a routine or changing a pattern or changing a location or changing friends, or, you know, just changing the way we deal with stuff, especially the way we deal with stuff, you know, it just seems like it's an overwhelming situation. But change is a constant, and if we allow ourselves to go with that, then we can find it much easier to grow and to allow. For those of you that might be listening at work that can't, you know, fully engage and log into the chat room, I invite you to call us at 347-838-8944. I want to take this opportunity to also say, if you haven't joined us on Facebook, there's an Honoring Hour fan page that is The Honoring Hour, but then we actually have a Facebook page that I started after the fan page, which is where everything goes on. That's our big thing, and we'll go back to the fan page once we've got our 5,000 members on Facebook. We've also joined LinkedIn, which I have to say I'm not up on yet. I'm trying not to be overwhelmed with everything else that's going on. And Twitter. We're on Twitter as well. Don't forget, when you're on here, I've got so many people that are wonderful about joining me on Facebook, and I forget, go ahead and friend us on here on Blog Talk, because the more friends we have, the better we grow. I don't necessarily go out and solicit other radio show hosts to come in. I like to have people join us because they're willing to join us and wanting to join us. So we thank you, and please remember that you can post comments there too. So that's my little blurb there. And going back to development, Michelle, you've been really wonderful when I had Circle of Self as the gathering, which I am starting again this Saturday. We did an activity where we actually switched the amygdala. And I remember doing that, and I remember that it brought on a lot of changes, but I don't remember the activity itself, like how we got into that. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, actually, I believe we just did a meditation, and it's all about clicking the amygdala forward. And, you know, so many times we read these things in spiritual literature and, you know, we hear about it and it sounds wonderful. But this actually has a great deal of scientific research behind it. There's a lot of work in this by a man named Dr. Amen, who is actually a very famous neuropsychologist. And, you know, really in switching that amygdala, and it's all about sitting in a space of personal acceptance, acceptance, you know, kind of the one, the whole world acceptance. And sitting in that meditative space, allowing an expansion of your mind, quieting those negative thoughts that are always telling you can't, you shouldn't, you may not, it actually raises the energy within the prefrontal cortex. And in doing that, it kind of helps to set the nervous system back into balance. Once the nervous system is back into balance, it actually stops that feedback loop into the amygdala and actually causes it to shrink again back into a more normal state. Now, this takes time, but just setting that intention within yourself of clicking it forward and visualizing, because the amygdala is shaped like an almond, and just think of an almond and click it forward towards your eyes. Setting that intention actually creates a neurological effect in the brain and raising the brain energy and helping with balance and, you know, really speaks to the emotional body. We're not working through fear anymore. You know, we're not going. That's not going to be our first reaction. We're going to work through that discernment. We're really going to take in all the sensation, you know, and do the allowing that gives us the information we need to make a good decision in the moment, right now. And it's a place of mindfulness. And I remember sitting in the room. I can't remember everybody who was there, but really sitting in that place of clicking that amygdala forward, and you know, setting that intention of, this is a safe world. I am completely cared for in this moment and in every moment. And part of that caring for is I have that internal wisdom to make the decisions to create the life that serves me and is life-affirming, mm-hmm. and finding that safety within yourself.
Right. And I remember doing that meditation and clicking the amygdala forward and thinking at the time, like I had the sense that, you know, that something really powerful had just happened. But at the same time, it was so subtle that, you know, shortly after the meditation, probably even later on that day, I just kind of felt like nothing had really happened. And, you know, in hindsight, a lot of things shifted for me after that circle of self meeting when we did that. So, and for anybody of you that's listening, Circle of Self is, right now it's a newsletter. It originally started as a gathering that I was doing here locally in Fredericksburg, where we just got together. And it's, if you're in the area or you're in a place where you can travel, I'm going to have them once a month instead of weekly. It really is about having you come and you practice what you're learning or what you're going through. You know, if you're practicing to be a speaker or you have just learned a new healing technique, it's not just where you come and listen to a lecture or somebody else, you know, governs it. You know, I usually have something planned, or I've asked somebody to have something planned. Michelle was a great person at helping me facilitate. But it's for everyone that comes and shows up, because it's a learning experience for everybody. I want to learn some stuff too, not just facilitate. And while I do learn when I facilitate, sometimes I like to just sit back and let somebody else bring in the information. So if you're in the area where you can join with us, love to have you do that. But we're also going to be, I've finally found a transcription machine. A friend of mine helped me locate that. So I'm going to be transcribing some of those. And, you know, this conversation about the amygdala and clicking it forward to help us with judgment, I'm going to go on a hunt for that one to see if I can't find it quickly and transcribe it. So I'll let you guys know. I'll post that on the website, www.thehonoringhour.com, because it was definitely way more powerful than I gave it credit for later on in the day after the meditation. So,
you know, Lynn, I'm always so fascinated about how connected we are to the things in nature. And, you know, I'm listening to you talk about the amygdala and how it really is shaped like an almond. And they found that actually eating almonds creates a neurological event in the brain that gives you the sensation that something amazing and wonderful is just about to happen.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah, I thought that was just beautiful. And here, you know, we have inside of our brains this little nut that when it's enlarged and dysfunctional, it goes through fear, but it really was intended to give you that sense that something wonderful is about to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of that, like you were saying, it's hard to see how far you've grown. And I think, you know, we've been so trained to have that immediate gratification. If my life isn't switched in this very moment, it didn't work, or, you know, I can't do this. And like Jeff Brown says in his book, Soul Shaping, growers are inchworms. Everything in nature, you know, a flower, you don't plant a seed and up comes the bloom. I mean, there's a process of germination, and then, you know, the stalk grows, the leaves grow, there's a bud, and then there's a bloom. And, you know, we love the blooms. We love smelling the sweet scent of that, you know, growing success. But there is so much beauty in every aspect of something growing. And, you know, we just have to give ourselves the same grace we give all the beautiful things in nature, a chance to really mature. That slow progression of growing. And, you know, that's where journals and things come in so well. And like you're saying, you know, going in and writing these things down and keeping track of them, you can really go back and just see how far you've come and delight in every move you made in a life-affirming way, which is another habit, raises the prefrontal cortex energy, and, you know, it creates more of that neural mapping supporting moving into a more healthier life-affirming way of behaving.
Right, you're right. We definitely do need to realize, you know, like we would tend a garden, you know, we need to tend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Good point, really good point. So I have a scenario that I had, had encountered. I was on the phone with a friend, and I use that term loosely, not because this person isn't a friend, but really because it's really more of an acquaintance. She's married to a friend of my husband's. And, you know, we have some things in common, but they're very, very different. You know, talk about, you know, we have two spiritual paths and walk them completely differently. That's the situation. So we were on the phone shortly after the Haiti earthquakes, and we don't really get into deep discussions. You know, they're usually pretty superficial about, you know, meeting with our husbands and just getting together like that. You know, I don't get really deep into stuff with her. And that's okay. That's a discernment that I've made. You know, she can be a friend, but, you know, she's in a different band of trust, and that's where we go. But she made a statement to me that, you know, since then I've noticed we haven't had a whole lot of contact, and not from not calling her or anything like that. It was just one of those points where we really realized how different our vibrations were, and our families just haven't gotten together again to kind of reorganize that. But we were talking about, you know, the earthquakes in Haiti because they had just happened, and she said that she felt like the earthquakes happened because the people essentially weren't good Christians, that they had, you know, practiced voodoo, and, you know, that it was just God's way of cleaning out the earth. And I realized that people do have that opinion. And so when she said that, it initially kind of shocked me, and I sat in a place that I was very thankful that, you know, spirit just really kind of whooped in and took over and I was able to say, you know, I don't see it that way. I see it as, you know, a lot of people are reaching the light, and they're making a choice to leave so that we can, the rest of us remaining here, can turn around and realize that we all are one, and look at how we've pulled together. It's a shame that it takes a tragedy for people to pull together, but it works. And, you know, as long as we keep learning that way, if that's our habit and our pattern, then spirit will keep providing that way. So, you know, I saw it in a whole different ball game, and I noticed that when I was explaining to her my view, after I had listened to her view and her explanation, that she, you know, shortly after that we were done. I mean, like a few, you know, simple words, and she had to go. It just wasn't something she could accept. But, you know, if you're out there and you're listening to us, for those of you that are on the line, if you've got something to say, remember to press 1. You know, how do you deal with it when somebody says something so sweeping and so broad? you know, again, JR said that he tries to look at that as a message from spirit, but if you can maybe get specific where we can give somebody an idea. You know, I offered her my perspective, and it was very different. I felt that this was a sacrifice that, you know, people had made to bring the world together during the time of change, and she saw it as a cleansing of bad people, two totally different scenarios. How about you, Michelle? Any?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, that's a tough one. So many times, you know, I've come up against people who really sit in that place of, if you're not like me and if you're not doing the things the way I think you should be doing, then you're bad or wrong. And that's such a judgment. And, you know, it always strikes me so funny in so many different religions, said in so many different phrasings, you know, judge not lest thee be judged. And to sit there and actually hold the space of a cleansing of an area through death and destruction does not sit well with me, because, you know, floods and hurricanes, they are natural phenomena, and they don't just skip, you know, the good house and go after the bad house. They devastate communities. You know, they devastate nature. They devastate the soil. And in my mind, that is not something I picture when I picture a loving divine entity caring and loving for the world. In the same way, would I judge myself if I make a mistake or do something wrong? Do I need to go in and break apart and disavow that part of myself and shame it? That just creates that whole thinking, that habit, thinking of shame as appropriate, which we know is so self-defeating and it's just so ugly. But when in speaking to someone like that, you know, I guess you can just give, you know, just hold that space in your heart of love and acceptance of self and send them back to them and engage in a discussion, you know, maybe bring in some less emotionally triggered events that'll hit a little bit home to them where they've seen destruction or someone they've loved, something's happened to, and say, well, in this instance, would you generalize it to this instance? Was this person bad or wrong? And, you know, maybe give them, you know, just some personal options that they can look at and offer them the opportunity to expand their perceptions. But, you know, then again, that just comes through discernment. If they choose to sit in that place, then that's one of the places through your discernment that you can bless and release and say, no, that's not me. But, you know, yeah, absolutely give them your perspective. But you can still love someone who completely disagrees with you or who you completely disagree with, and in not a disavowing way, but in just saying, okay, we're on different pages. We see this differently. And then just loving and release, you know, whatever you need to not pull that in and feel that sorrow from that misconnection.
Right, and that's exactly what I had to do. And, you know, I was grateful in that moment because in another article I was reading, the woman that wrote it gave a list of discerning individuals have the following attributes, and this is by Mary Kay Buttery. And she said that discerning individuals, no disagreeing is an acceptable option. And I think that a lot of people have a problem with disagreeing because they, quote-unquote, have a problem with conflict. And disagreeing with someone is not necessarily a conflict. I think there's a big difference between a disagreement and a conflict. So discerning individuals, no disagreeing is an acceptable option. They are in charge of their life and ready to make choices. So, again, it's about taking responsibility. They, you know, and that doesn't mean that you're barreling over everybody. It just means that you take responsibility for yourself and you are in charge of your life. And I noticed that she didn't say in control, but just in charge. You know, you're leading your life. They know that no thank you is an acceptable response. They realize some people may not like or agree with their decision and choices. They choose what brings them peace. And I think that's so key, that when you're being discerning, you have to feel peaceful. I don't think anybody ever really feels peaceful with judgment. I know personally I don't. you know, I can, and that's one of my real big red flags. You know, when we get into that discussion, Michelle, about is this discernment, is this judgment, you know, we'll talk about specific situations. You know, at the end of the phrase, if I'm peaceful with what my idea of that is, then I'm not necessarily, you know, there's no emotional agitation behind it. So that's a good way of understanding a discernment attribute. And then the last one that she lists, she says, if in the process they feel uncomfortable, they know this is acceptable as they are forming a new habit that serves them. So it's not necessarily about not being, you know, you don't have to be comfortable all the time when you're being discerning, but it is about recognizing that, again, bringing your awareness to it and being supportive of yourself, non-judgmental of yourself, in knowing that you may be making a different choice from other people and that that's what's right for you. Our intuition doesn't always guide us to the least embarrassing or the least awkward things we ever do, but it certainly will always guide us in the direction of our highest and best. And that's, you know, that's the way that we get to that place of following our highest and best. Those are her attributes. Again, her name is Mary Kay Buttery, that I got that article from, and I thought that was some really good points for a checkoff list.
Yeah, Lynn, and I don't know about you, and you know, I'm sure so many people have felt that when you stand in that place of judgment, you can feel the walls. You know, it's almost like your energy field has gone on lockdown, and you're just not willing to allow anything else to come in. And but when you really can sit in that place of saying yes and no with that equal bliss from that discernment, you don't have to go into an energetic lockdown. You can really sit there and allow, because you're very safe within yourself. And, you know, you're not creating, like you said, there's no conflict. There's no reason to go into that whole warrior stance, because you're not arguing or disavowing or shaming someone else to put them in that stance. You're just saying, you know, I hear. But in hearing you, it does not necessarily mean I'm going to engender every one of your perspectives and own them, but I can simply hold the space for them, allowing you to own your own, gleaning the wisdom from that, you know, giving you my perspective, and if you choose to glean some wisdom from that, great. But there's just a great deal more flow to it.
Right. We have a caller. I'm going to call out the last four numbers of your phone number. The last four numbers are 4223. So 4223, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How about you, ladies?
I'm good. JR, I recognize your voice. I wasn't paying attention to the number. But so, you know, what do you have to say about this? I'm definitely interested in. You always have some words of wisdom.
Well, you know, of course, I'm only chatting today because I'm working, and then I'm like, okay, then she's going to bring up Haiti. I'm like, oh, my God.
Got to call in on that one.
I'm telling you, I got to call in on that one because, you know, because I think, and looking at Haiti as a for instance, is that Spirit is really putting lines out there for us to decide if we're going to cross or not, is what I'm feeling. And it's a lot to do with our growth and our expansion. And, I mean, I agree with y'all 100%. I mean, a lot of it is it's really our learning to allow each other the space to be okay where I am at in this, and to be okay where you're at in this, whatever the situation. Because we're each individual divine beings living this existence and creating this environment for ourselves, and we're creating situations that are taking us beyond who we were and are. It's just pretty, I mean, it's just awesome that the universe is just really delivering, and more, it seems like more and more situations are coming about, because it's forcing individuals, because I had an individual with a Haiti thing, and she was all Jesus this, Jesus that, and we need to worry about our own people here. I'm like, well, where would Jesus be at in that? So, you know, because they were just really against all the help and everything that we were sending to Haiti as a nation. And I'm like, you know, but the thing is, it's forcing individual, when we're living our truth and we're questioning individuals like that, as I did, we're allowing them the space to say, wait a minute, they have to really be looking at what they're living in that truth for themselves. So they're questioning themselves when they're seeing us live this truth.
Right. And I think that, you know, judgment and discernment has a lot to do with, you know, what would I want for myself? Not because I'm going to impose it on you, but because if I would want, like in the situation of Haiti, if that had happened here, I would want people to come help us. You know,
exactly,
so
yeah.
Would I want to go help, you know, would I go help them? And I think that, you know, that again kind of comes in of, you know, it comes back to, you know, treat your neighbor like you would treat yourself. You know, be good to other people, but also be good to you. Not just be good to other people and don't be good to you, and not just be good to you and not good to other people, and not be good just to people because you want something from them or because you like them. Be good to all other people as well. And being good to another person could show up in setting a boundary, like I'm not going to let you, you know, step on my foot because it's unacceptable to me. You know, I'm going to be good enough to you to say that's an unacceptable thing and let you understand what my boundaries are.
Right. But, well, hopefully we can get to a place where we're giving and doing for another, loving them where they're at, is really learning to love myself where I'm at when I'm doing that. Yeah.
That's a beautiful and eloquent way to put it, because that is really what it's all about. It's really about being able to love yourself. And when you can love yourself, it's really, when you're in a space of really loving yourself, it's hard to be in judgment. And if you think you're loving yourself and you're in judgment of somebody else, then you're not loving yourself.
I agree with both of you. I think grace is kind of a pervasive element in the universe. And, you know, it doesn't have border patrols. So it actually goes through you into, you know, into every living being. You know, it's one of those, it's, you know, if you kind of think of, you know, God, Buddha, whoever you want to think of flying over and dropping this angel dust or whatever down, it doesn't just hit, you know, the flower, it hits the whole garden. And, you know, we have to start to remember that this is a global community. And, you know, as we move into that, you know, Haiti is our neighbor. So was, you know, New Orleans during the hurricane, and you know, different churches that are experiencing hate crimes, and you know, the neighbor who maybe might be losing their house and you know needs a house payment. I mean, it can happen anywhere. There, you know, people have become isolated and out of fear of being judged, and it's time to throw down those barriers and just say, you know, come one, come all. You know, and having that expanse of heart that not only lights the soul of your own, you know, lights the flame of your own soul, but is a beacon, and you know, is one of those sharing flames that lights the soul in everyone else, and that's the wildfire that needs to sweep the universe. You know, just that soul love, acceptance, and that just pervasive grace that just lends all of humanity saying yes, you are welcome, and you belong here.
Now, Michelle, that is such a beautiful way to end. We've got about a minute left.
Perfect.
Yes, it just worked out beautifully.
Glad to hear from you, JR.
And you too, both of you ladies.
Yes, thank you for calling in, JR. Love to hear your voice. And Michelle, thank you so much for doing this show with me today. It has been a blessing.
Oh, I loved it. Thank you so much for inviting me. You have a wonderful afternoon.
Thanks. You're welcome. And I want to remind everybody that's listening, Kelly Centers is going to be with us next week talking about the universal laws and the archangels that govern them, that work with them. So we hope that you'll join us there. Please friend us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter. And I'd love to have you friend us here on Blog Talk Radio and start putting some comments out there so that when people are surfing the shows and they're new to that, they can, you know, get an idea of what's looking, what we're looking like out there. So please, if you're in the Fredericksburg area or within a driving radius, I would love to have you join me this Saturday for Circle of Self Gathering. Out more about that at talkintoangels@aol.com. You can find a link to that email at www.thehonoringhour.com. I'm going to sign off today by playing one of Sabina Kevenberg's songs, and it is My Simple Prayer. She's been gracious enough to let us use her music, and she is the opening music. Thank you, Sabina. So here you go, My Simple Prayer. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll talk with you again soon.